from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a new nominee for Buried Lead. Buried Lead is what they say in the journalistic fraternity and sorority, I guess, now. When the important part of a story is lodged not at the top, not at the beginning where you'd expect it to be by the rules of journalistic writing, but way, way, way down. Maybe you have to do this to get to it. Hence, in the New York Times of last Thursday, a little story about the new Time Warner building on Columbus Circle and whether it's going to be festooned with signs all the time and make Columbus Circle look like Times Square. We would, you know, we don't want too much visual noise in Manhattan, is the thrust of the story, you see. We want some peace and quiet in Manhattan. But here, way down, look how far down. Right down here, we get to this, which seems to me to be arguably the lead. But as always, you be the judge. So there's an incident on Friday when a photographer for the New York Times takes pictures of the Time Warner Center for the story that's to appear in the New York Times about whether there's too much visual noise in the windows of Time Warner Center. She's on the sidewalk in front of the Time Warner Center. She said two security guards, neither of whom would identify himself, insisted that she stop. Quote, "You're not allowed to photograph the structure of the building," the photographer quoted the first guard as telling her. She showed them her press identification card issued by the police department and insisted that she was within her rights to photograph a building, Time Warner Center, from the public way, on assignment. The second guard told her, "If you persist, I'm going to call the police." Pressed, he backed down from this threat. An official from Time Warner Center said, "If someone on our security staff stopped a photographer from a newspaper from photographing the building, they probably overstepped. There should be no restrictions in terms of the public's ability to photograph the building from the outside," he said, "because it's a public place." Hey, also because it's Time Warner Center. I don't think he gets the irony of the building housing Time Magazine preventing somebody, a photographer from the New York Times, from photographing their building. I don't think he quite... Anyway, to me, that's the story. Go figure, department. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in addition to a certain list that we're compiling here at the broadcast, this from a remarks delivered this week by, what is he, President? Yeah, President Bush.
"I have never ordered torture. I will never order torture. The values of this country are such that torture is not a part of our soul and our being." The Prime Minister brought up the Abu Ghraib
Situation, yeah.
I assured him that these soldiers do not represent what Americans think.
Okay. You heard the photographer snapping away because this would be the third documented different pronunciation of the notorious prison in Iraq. Let's hear it one more time, just that pronunciation.
Abu Ghraib.
Yeah. All right, just double-checking now. Here's President Bush about three weeks ago.
"A new Iraq will also need a humane, well-supervised prison system. Under the dictator, prisons like Abu Ghraib were symbols of death and torture. That same prison became a symbol of disgraceful conduct by a few American troops who dishonored our country and disregarded our values. America will fund the construction of a modern maximum security prison. When that prison is completed, detainees at Abu Ghraib will be relocated."
All right. By the way, that part isn't true. The Iraqi judge has declared the prison a crime scene, so it won't be torn down. But let's just make sure we all have the memo now. Here is the new, according to the President of the United States, the new official pronunciation of the prison there.
Abu Ghraib.
All right. So apparently we haven't talked about it enough. You know, the Republicans have been saying, we were talking about that prison abuse scandal too much. Apparently, ladies and gentlemen, not enough yet to learn how to pronounce the name of the place. Hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, don't bother. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this particular edition of Le Show. The welcome is so specific now. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the digital wonderland has been a semi-regular feature of this broadcast for a while. Nothing in what I'm going to relay to you now it should be new to you, therefore. Which just proves that Eric Taub of the New York Times doesn't listen to this program. Because he thinks it's newsworthy to report this week, while many users have no problem receiving high-definition TV or other digital telecasts, others have flooded online discussion groups with tales of woe. These users report that decoder boxes may pull in some broadcast stations but not others, depending on the time of day, distance from the transmitter, proximity to other buildings, and weather conditions. Boxes from every manufacturer are reported to freeze up and to require rebooting. Constant fiddling with the antenna, something many consumers thought had ended years ago when they threw out their last rabbit-eared TV and hooked onto cable. For a digital TV antenna to work properly, its aim must often be as precise as a sharpshooter's. Signal problems occur if you rotate the antenna even slightly. That was on this broadcast 3 years ago. Since the transition to digital broadcasting began in 1998, wow, 6 years ago. At least we're making the deadline for the handover in Iraq. That's one we're going to make. 8.3 million households have acquired digital TVs, but only 1.7 million of them have the built-in hardware or set-top box necessary to receive digital broadcasts. The other 6.6 million sets are being used to watch analog TV or DVDs. So those were good purchases. That was a good idea. Rick Room, a software engineer in Simi Valley, can receive the digital feed of almost every Los Angeles station. But even though he's using a 17-foot antenna on his roof, that got to be ugly, and lives just 35 miles from the transmitter, some days the ABC station breaks up, freezes, and then disappears. It happens especially around sundown. Well, it saves him from having to watch ABC prime time, so. Digital set-top boxes are as complex as computers. When broadcasters send signals that do not exactly adhere to the official transmission standards, your box may not be capable of handling them. To cut power bills with so few digital viewers, stations that transmit a digital signal are using less than full power. That'll screw up your box. The earliest digital set-top boxes dealt so poorly with multipath, that's bouncing signals off of buildings for people who live in cities, that Sinclair Broadcast Group petitioned the FCC to allow the adoption of the European Digital Broadcast Standard, which was supposed to be better. You heard about this right here on... But new technology will be incorporated into next-generation TV decoders that should eliminate many of these problems. Tony Boyd, a retail store planner in Dallas, receives digital broadcast channels with his decoder box and an antenna, but when he's watching some high-definition channels on DirecTV, the audio or video drops out, and the box occasionally freezes. He's gone through two units, but the symptoms persist. DirecTV, he says, cannot solve the problem. Digital converter boxes are getting better, says an HDTV consultant. But for customers who expect over-the-air digital TV to work like regular TV, that is to say, like analog TV, the one we're supposed to throw away, this HDTV consultant has some advice. I'd steer clear of it. The technology will not support their expectations, unquote. Unquote, a digital television tech consultant, ladies and gentlemen. So maybe he knows what he's talking about. I don't know. I don't even know whether to believe me, let alone the New York Times. But now, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You can believe that, because it's so not true. Tales of airport security. You might as well believe things that aren't true, because then you know where you stand. Tales of airport security. This is from Andrea. On June 15th, I was taking a flight from San Francisco Airport. Andrea writes, when I noticed a cute little stuffed white bunny with big pink-lined floppy ears in a chair as we were boarding. No one with children seemed to have lost it, so I left it there. Much to my surprise, the bunny was handed to flight attendants, who asked the plane's passengers if it belonged to anyone. When no one claimed the bunny, the senior attendant handed it to the pilot, who took it into the cockpit just as he locked up. Aren't we, Andrea asks, taking off our shoes to prevent hidden plastic explosives detonated by remote control from getting on planes and being cautioned not to take unclaimed articles on board? Andrea asks a rhetorical question at the end of her tale of airport security. Ladies and gentlemen, you can do that too. Now, as to believing things that aren't true because you might as well. Dateline London, the effective strength of marijuana consumed in Britain. You've heard that marijuana has supposedly gotten so much stronger over the years from the Partnership for a Brain-Free America. The effective strength of marijuana consumed in Britain has remained stable for the last 30 years, according to a study published this weekend. The research says there's no evidence for claims that most marijuana consumed in Britain and the rest of Europe is now 10 times or more stronger than it was in the 70s. Although the U.S. drug czar John Walter says the marijuana now available bears little resemblance to that on the market 30 years ago. The European Union study says that the strength of the active ingredient has remained unchanged at about 6% for most of the marijuana smoked in Britain. It says the amount of marijuana put in the typical British joint has also remained constant for 20 years. The results are based on analysis by the Forensic Science Service of marijuana seized by the police between 1995 and 2002. This is based on mainly imported marijuana, not homegrown, like you're going to grow marijuana in Britain. Yeah, you could. The research is the first European review of the potency of marijuana. There has been much speculation on the strength of marijuana available today, but little in the way of hard evidence, says the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drugs Addiction. So we can't believe that. But, you know, it's so easy, ladies and gentlemen, to get confused and to get misled. You know, you want to sometimes upbraid members of Congress for allowing themselves to buy into the premises of the Iraq War so easily. But here, in their defense, is something they bought into even more easily. More than a dozen lawmakers attended a congressional reception this year honoring the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, in which Moon declared himself the Messiah and said his teachings have helped Hitler and Stalin be reborn as new persons. At the March 23rd ceremony in the Dirksen Senate office building, Representative Danny K. Davis, Democrat of Illinois, hello, Chicago, wore white gloves and carried a pillow holding an ornate crown that was placed on Moon's head. This is in the Senate office building, ladies and gentlemen. We pay for that building. You're not supposed to crown people in it. Last I looked, the Korean-born businessman and religious leader then delivered a long speech saying he was sent to Earth to save the world 6 billion people. Emperors, kings, and presidents have declared to all heaven and earth that Reverend Moon is none other than humanity's savior and true parent. Dad, can I borrow the car for the next 1 million years? Details of the ceremony, first reported in Salon.com, by the son of a person, an old high school buddy of mine. Now wild. Have prompted several lawmakers to say they were misled or duped by organizers. Their complaints prompted a Moon-affiliated website to remove a video of the Crown of Peace ceremony from the website. Senator Mark Dayton, Democrat of Minnesota, he attended. He says he was simply honoring a constituent receiving a peace award. He did not know Moon would be there. We fell victim to it. We were duped, said his spokesperson. The event organizers flew in nearly 100 honorees from all 50 states to receive National Peace Awards, the only International Crown of Peace Award. Well, one went to Moon, the other to his wife. Representative Roscoe G. Bartlett of Maryland said he attended basically to salute the Washington Times, a conservative newspaper owned by Moon. I had no idea what would happen, Bartlett said. Yeah, who would dream? A key organizer, though, Archbishop George Stallings, Jr., said Moon's prominent role should have surprised no one. You'd have to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to know that any event that's sponsored by the Washington Times could involve the influence or potential presence of Reverend Moon, he said. Use of the Dirksen building requires a senator's approval. Dayton said he gave no such permission, and Stallings says the question of who did is shrouded in mystery. So, you know, it's you can dupe him about that, ladies and gentlemen. War, that's a snap. Piece of cake. Piece of cakewalk. The among the big news stories of the week, of course, the book tour. Former President Clinton outselling Hillary. First day, breaking records, going on every talk show imaginable. Yes, it's another episode of Clinton Something next here on the show.
Clinton Something, the Harlem Years.
Our thanks to President Clinton for being with us. Tomorrow night, the woman who is Scott Peterson's nanny for the full hour. Next, the great Aaron Brown.
Clear.
Larry, thanks. That was fun.
No, Mr. President, I meant it about inviting you back. I mean, I say that to guests a lot, but...
No, I know, Larry, and I appreciate it. Yeah. As I said on the show, after I finish with the book tour, I'm going to be spending most of my time on my AIDS project, but...
Hey, we'll even talk about that. But that whole parallel lives thing you were talking about, that was great. That was almost like some kind of George Lucas thing.
Excuse me, Mr. President.
And this is production assistant Alicia. I think you met her in the green room.
No, I would have remembered. Hey, Alicia, where do you get those pretty green eyes?
I guess from my DNA pool.
Hey, Larry, you're hiring them smart these days.
Oh, you got to. Tough business. Fox is breathing down my ass.
Sounds unpleasant for both of you.
I don't think anybody asked you this yet.
Oh, what is it, hon?
Well, I need you to sign this waiver.
Mm-hmm.
Although we already aired the show, so...
So at this point, I'd have to sue myself. Sure.
I gotta do some promos. Take 2 seconds.
Okay, hon. Mm-hmm. Let's get out of harm's way over here where it's not lit.
Okay.
There you go.
In 3, 2...
Princess Di's Butler's Barber, plus your phone calls, tonight.
Can you see where to sign? I've got a little light.
Mm-hmm. You seem to be shining it on your chest.
Oh, I'm sorry.
<It's all right. laughs>
Here's the waiver over here. Totally apart from my body.
3, 2...
Tonight, Jim Baker on why Tammy Faye has cancer and he doesn't. For the full hour.
There you go.
Thanks.
Cute outfit.
Thank you. I happen to be wearing...
Hold that thought. Yeah, Carville, talk to me.
Yeah, Mr. President, that was the best yet.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
You were warmer than on 60 Minutes, more substantive than on Oprah, and more likable than fried cheesecake.
What do you mean I got to do it again? It was fine.
Well, you know, I think I'm kind of finding my rhythm with this deal.
Yeah. I said Jim Baker.
Also, Larry's just such a pussycat.
Yeah.
You know, he's like a downfilled pillow of an interviewer. But you sure it was good?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, check the tape.
Tell you how I know, Mr. President. Mm-hmm. You had Mary cussing at the TV by the first commercial break.
You still think the stuff about my supporting the Iraq war plays all right? I mean, I know we pulled it up the wazoo, and it does seem believable to most folks.
But I feel the same way about it as when Mrs. Clinton first brought it up. You know, you really don't want to be fighting with your wife in public about foreign policy, you know. And the added plus is that it's a little tricky for the Bushies to attack you for being soft on terrorism when you're out supporting their war.
Okay, did they check the tape?
I guess you're right.
No, you know I'm right. And unlike that other big ally, Joe Lieberman, you know, you eat pork chops.
How long does it take to check if a slugging a tape?
Well, onward down the media food chain, I guess.
Yeah, right. I'll talk to you later, Mr. President.
Thanks, James. Hey, you're still here.
Guess what I'm wearing underneath my jeans?
I'm going to take a wild, leaping, outrageous guess and say, a thong.
You got that right. I heard what you were saying during the show.
Well, that's good. I guess that means my mic was on.
And I was just wondering if you had, you know, any interest in, you know, parallel life with me.
You know what, Alicia, that's very sweet, but I got a book signing tonight, and I'm committed to staying until every customer gets a signed copy, you know, so.
Look, I'll just do it again. Jim Baker and why Tammy Faye got cancer and he didn't for the full hour tonight.
But thank you for getting me to sign the waiver.
Oh, that's okay. You signed it before the show, too. Well, goodbye.
Clear.
Want to get back to the green room, Mr. President?
Sure.
So, I saw a little Alicia put the move on you.
Yeah, you know, she kind of did.
But you didn't, I mean... You wouldn't...
No, Sir Larry, I waved off the play.
Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's sad. I resisted the temptation to have a little fling with that very attractive young woman for the most morally indefensible reason.
Hey, you are getting introspective, Mr. President. What reason is that?
Because I can't. You take care, Larry.
Youthful angst and middle-aged powerlessness. Together they add up to Clinton something, the Harlem years.
When you're cruising down in luck by the sea, and you're all pepped up on gin and vodka deep, then you dance and sing all night till the island he's in sight, and you'll hear the natives sing merrily. Mama don't want no peas and rice, coconut oil. Mama don't want no peas and rice and coconut oil. Mama don't want no peas and rice, she don't want no coconut oil. Keep a bottle of brandy handy all the time. Mama don't want no gin because it makes her sing. Mama don't want no gin because it makes her sing. Mama don't want no glass of gin because it's bound to make her sing. Keeps her hot and bothered all around the chin. She's got a pain across her chest. Mama complains, she's got a pain across her chest. Mama complains, she's got a pain, and the reason's very plain. The food that Papa gave Mama won't digest. She likes to have a run, says it fills her soul with fun, and that it makes her feel like hoopy all the time. When you're down in Nassauwassa by the sea, when you're down in Nassauwassa
by the sea.
When you down in Nassauwassa,
you'll defund good old Bacardi.
Down in Nassauwassa, you're so by the sea.
This is Le Show. And when did we learn about Abu Ghraib? November, January, March, April, May of this year? Well, it's interesting because the Australians knew about it last June. According to... Hey, welcome to Life Outside the Bubble. Australia's Defence Minister, Robert Hill, was censured by the Australian Senate this week for failing to respond to reports of abuse and misleading the Australian public on the issue. He defended not providing full details of reports from Australian lawyers stationed in Iraq. He expressed in general terms the concerns of the Australian liaison officer, Paul Muggleton, about U.S. practices. I declined to take it further than that because I did not think it was in the best interests of our relationship with the United States. The reports, multiple reports of prisoner abuse from June last year, June 2003, reported by Amnesty International to the Australian capital in Canberra. June 2003, ladies and gentlemen. Early in the year, in the controversy, we are getting out, or are we? U.S. Administrator L. Paul Bremer has issued a number of edicts revising Iraq's legal code and has appointed at least 24 Iraqis to government jobs with multi-year terms in an attempt to extend his influence long after the planned handover of sovereignty. Some of the orders will remain in effect unless overturned by Iraq's interim government, restrict the power of the interim government, and impose U.S. rules for the country's transition to democracy. Among the most controversial orders, an election law that gives a 7-member commission to the power to disqualify political parties and any candidates they support. The effect of other regulations could last much longer. This is from the Washington Post. Bremer has ordered that National Security Advisor and National Intelligence Chief chosen by the interim prime minister he selected be given 5-year terms, which would mean they'd be serving when a new government takes over that's elected, you see. He's installed inspector generals for 5-year terms in every ministry, formed and filled commissions to regulate communications, public broadcasting, and securities markets. Please give. Public broadcasting in Iraq. He named a public integrity commissioner who will have the power to refer corrupt government officials for prosecution. Some Iraqi officials, including a former member of the governing council, now out of business, see the edicts and appointments as an effort to extend U.S. control after the transfer of sovereignty, says Mahmoud Othman, formerly from the governing council. Iraqis should decide many of these issues. Bremer has defended the orders as necessary to implement democratic reforms and update Iraq's out-of-date legal code. You set up these things and they begin to develop a certain life and momentum of their own, and it's harder to reverse course, Bremer said in a recent interview.
Yeah.
Somebody got to take over, and somebody got to make sure that I don't know what somebody's got to do. Ladies and gentlemen, I have no clue. A letter about detainee policy sent in 2002 from the State Department's legal advisor to the Justice Department's Deputy Attorney General was kind of nasty. William H. Taft IV said the Justice's legal advice to President Bush about how to handle detainees in the war on television was seriously flawed, and its reasoning was incorrect as well as incomplete. Taft was not invited to further meetings on the subject. Britain's Attorney General says American plans for military tribunals at Guantanamo Bay are unacceptable to the British government. The tribunals did not offer sufficient guarantee of a fair trial. Two of the four British nationals still held in Gitmo are among the president's initial list of six to be tried under the military tribunal plans. There are certain principles, says the British Attorney General, on which there can be no compromise. Fair trial is one of those, which is the reason we in the UK have been unable to accept that the U.S. military tribunals offer guarantees of a fair trial. He said suspected terrorists should not be put into a black hole beyond the reach of the courts. Yes, they should. Speaking as American, I'm saying, yes, they should. While it found no operational ties between al-Qaeda and Iraq, the 9/11 Commission has concluded that Osama bin Laden's terrorist network had long-running contacts with Iran. Al-Qaeda may have even played a yet unknown role in aiding Hezbollah militants in the 1996 bombing of Khobar Towers. We knew they were involved with some country that began with an I. Iraq, Iran, they're just right next to you. A group of 31 UN human rights investigators have issued a rare joint appeal to the United States to give them access to detention centers in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo Bay, mounting frustration over the Bush administration's refusal to open the doors of its detention centers to UN human rights monitors. They want in at the earliest possible day to determine whether human rights of prisoners are properly upheld. The way prisoners are treated in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo is totally contrary to international law, says Doudou Diene of Senegal. Yeah, they would know. Oh, come on. Maybe he would. And the Associated Press has sued the Pentagon and the Air Force, seeking access to all records of President George W. Bush's military service. The news agency wonders why it has come to this. It seems a little curious, because the president made a pretty forceful presentation. He had nothing to hide, says the AP's lawyer. A lawsuit is needed because so far only paper files have been provided, which conceivably could have been tampered with. The microfilm record has been in storage. It can't be altered. Access to the microfilm would settle the matter. Administrative efforts we've made, says the AP's lawyer, just aren't getting traction. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the new iteration of our copyrighted feature, the near apologies of the week, from Greta Van Susteren at Fox News. Dear viewers, live television does not always enable one to make the best or perfect decisions all the time. Last night was one of those times when we aired something in a manner I now regret. At the top of the show, we started with the story of the South Korean hostage. The story included very disturbing video of this man begging for his life. During our live hit out of Iraq, we also showed you video of four ambushed Marines. While none of the video showed close-ups, the video was difficult to watch. I still would have shown the video, but with a warning that the video was graphic and the viewer might want to turn away for a minute. Boston officials received an actual apology from the chairman of New York State's Democratic Party, who had objected to a convention party for his state being held in South Boston because of the neighborhood's past racial tensions. A longtime assemblyman from Manhattan repeatedly praised South Boston for its ocean views and mended ways in his apology. Online operator of marketplaces eBay Friday apologized to users for billing system glitches. eBay sellers have been most vocal about the billing snafus. The firm is still working to clear out remaining issues as some sellers continue to wait for credit. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger originally planned to change state law to allow animal shelters to kill strays after being held for 72 hours, not 6 days, as current law. Birds, pot-bellied pigs, snakes, and other pets could be killed upon arrival. But the governor had a change of heart Friday. He told reporters the proposal was a mistake. Everything will stay exactly the same, he said. There was an apology in there somewhere, but I'm not going to dig for it. It's a mistake. And he's reversing it. Two judges apologized this week. A federal appeals judge appointed by former President Bill Clinton apologized for comparing the Supreme Court's 2000 decision in Bush versus Gore to the ascendancy of Mussolini and Hitler. Judge Guido Calabresi shocked an audience at a lawyer's conference last weekend when he made the remarks. And a federal... Oh, no, this is the same judge. Just two different stories. In a letter to the court, he acknowledged he'd given the impression he was taking a partisan position. He apologizes. As he exits Access Hollywood to a new stage as host of the Insider Entertainment News magazine, Pat O'Brien had some choice words for his former co-worker, Sean Robinson. He sent a scathing email to Robinson. He now has regrets. I've apologized to Sean, and to be honest, I am regretting the situation. A Detroit Pistons spokesman apologized Monday night for a flap over T-shirts commemorating the team's NBA championship. Spokesman said no one representing the Pistons or the NBA tried to block the sales of the T-shirt during the downtown parade. However, people identifying themselves as agents for the Pistons and the NBA did confiscate the shirts that some teenagers were trying to sell. In response to a heated discussion about El Paso being named the sweatiest city in the United States in a press release, Old Spice has issued a statement saying, "We apologize to anyone who was inadvertently offended." The White House apologized to the owners of a Fairfield, Connecticut business after President Bush praised the woman who stole $308,000 from them as a good soul. And Paul Wolfowitz, Deputy Defense Secretary, said Thursday he was wrong in accusing reporters covering Iraq of sitting in their Baghdad hotels and publishing rumors. "I extend a heartfelt apology and hope you will accept it," says Paul Wolfowitz. Of course, there was a prominent non-apology this week as well. Vice President Cheney, encountering Senator Patrick Leahy on the floor of the Senate for the annual Senate class photo, was quoted in the Washington Post as, he was actually quoted in the Washington Post as saying, "Go F yourself," except that he spelled out the word. Well, didn't spell it out, pronounced the word, all spelled out. There's a lot of foo-foo about this because, of course, Andrew Card, President Bush's chief of staff, was all over John Kerry when he was quoted in Rolling Stone using the same word to describe Bush's Iraq policy. But these are Republicans. Cheney interviewed by Fox News. I wonder how he decided to give that interview. I wonder how he chose them of all the, well, they're fair and balanced and they pay all their employees right on time. Sure. In being interviewed on Fox News, didn't quite admit saying the word. That's a word I don't often use in expressing myself, he told Neil Cavuto, but kind of admitted it, and then when asked whether he apologized or felt bad about it, said no. After he uttered the expletive, he said he felt better.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's less than a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney, confidential. Just because a person is living the secure, undisclosed lifestyle doesn't mean you can kick them around like so many homeless people's knapsacks. That was the message we started sending loud and clear this week. And we weren't sending it via back channels. When I went to the Senate floor and told Senator Pat Leahy to engage in an anatomically improbable sexual act with himself, it was about as spontaneous as a John Kerry quip. It was just our way of saying the gloves are off, and there isn't another set of gloves on underneath. And although the immediate recipient was a Democrat senator, there were a number of my Republican colleagues on the blind copy list of that particular message. Because just before taking off on a little campaign trip called Operation Boost Kerry's Negatives, I had some arms to twist in a place you'd think would be a little closer to home, our very own State Department. They'd been superbly on message last April, issuing an information product that terrorism incidents were way down. Now, for reasons unknown, they were engaging in some after-the-fact fact-checking I arranged to meet Colin Powell on a secure and disclosed residential street for a little tete-a-tete offensive. Wednesday, 1:33 p.m.
You know, Mr. Vice President, I understand your need for security, but still, my building is as secure as...
As a starless reputation. Colin, don't kid a kidder. Your shop leaks like the Andrea Doria. Anybody in this neighborhood who sees us walking down the street probably thinks we're from the cable company. Relax. Enjoy the sunshine. It may be your last opportunity.
What is that? Some kind of bizarre threat?
No, of course not. I'm just saying, for all we know, a comet could crash into the Earth tomorrow because of the lack of global warming or something. Mm-hmm. That's all. So look, my friend, I'm hearing some chatter about an updated terrorism report coming out of your shop.
There's been some chatter, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it based on our press release about it.
Mm. I guess the question just naturally pops up in this particular circumstance. Is an updated report really necessary?
Well, if your agency has put out a product with so many numerical discrepancies...
You do what Halliburton does. You blame the accountants and you get different ones. You don't put out a whole new set of books.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Mr. Vice President. The reputation of the U.S. State Department, which, whether you like it or not, is part of our government, is at stake. To leave that uncorrected report out there would be a terrible blow to our credibility.
Oh, look, for starters, why don't you cram that respectfully stuff down your pie hole and crap it out as crab cakes? Secondly, just whom are you trying to impress with your all-important credibility? The bedwetters at the UN? Let's...
Good morning. Is the mayor late again today?
I guess so. Now, why don't you kiss my big white keister?
I'll just wait inside for the mailman. Thank you.
Making friends wherever you go.
She's going to think twice before opposing administration policy in the future. Now, as I was saying, let's not forget that our very own Defense Department has taken some body blows to credibility.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see Don Rumsfeld issuing corrected reports, do you?
That's true, I don't. But look, Mr. Vice President, I've already taken a bullet for this administration when I put forward that case at the UN Security Council. I hate to bring it up, but...
Mr. Powell, pardon me if I get all pedantic on you, but... You brought it up 47 times just in discussions with my people. Any day now, we could find evidence that those vans really were what we said we knew they were, so...
Dick, there's no way the corrected report isn't coming out.
Hey, agreed. You think I want to stifle the free flow of accurate information? You must be thinking of some other Dick Cheney. I'm only saying that the damn thing doesn't necessarily have to be in such a damn hurry to come out. This information would still be pertinent in January, wouldn't it?
Dick, I'm not coming back. These 4 months till the election are my legacy. A corrected terrorism report is a big part of that.
You know, Colin, I'm not sure anybody ever told you this, but you know who suggested to the president-elect that you'd be the first choice for Secretary of State in the first place? Hint, it wasn't Karl Rove.
Was it you?
Well... No, it was my deputy, Scooter, but look, big fella, let me cut to the chase. You don't play softball with us on this. You're not going to be around the UN come September to play cricket with all those butt munchers.
You're threatening me?
Why would I do that?
Well,
I'm just saying the Supreme Court kicked the can on my energy task force secrets down past the election.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking... Your kicking foot is at least as good as Ruth Bader Ginsburg's.
Well, oh, thank God you're here. My keypad can't remember my password.
Lady, go shove your own face in it. Now you've got me doing it.
Look, I'm just saying, give it some thought. No. The terrorists already know what they've done, and the enemies of freedom don't care. Now, if you get back to the office and... After due consideration, you feel like withholding the so-called corrected report good for you. If you don't, look, it's a free country, and you're free to take your very own delicatessen and relocate it in the shadiest part of your own personal municipality.
Well, I've given it some thought, Dick.
Mm-hmm.
Delaying the report is a non-starter. You've got to have a plan B.
Oh, we have a plan B, all right. Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
You marry yourself, and then you take yourself on a honeymoon to Vegas, and you get yourself flipping pregnant with twins.
Okay, look, I'm calling my car. I've got to get back to the building before sundown when all the passwords change. How about this? We correct the numbers in the report, but we leave the words the same.
Mr. Secretary, and I mean this with the greatest possible respect, you can go to hell, and B, you've got a deal. This whole profane outburst thing seems to be proving pretty productive so far. Some of my people think it doesn't really belong in my convention speech. But we'll see. In the meantime, it feels so good. End of partial diary for June 23rd, 2004. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a hearing this week about the FBI's inability to make its computer system work, Robert Mueller, the director of the FBI, says the Bureau's computer system was so limited that it cannot search its files for combinations of terms like flight and schools. Instead, the system could search only for words like flight and school one at a time. One word to FBI Director Mueller, Google. That concludes this edition of the show, ladies and gentlemen. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network. On your computer whenever you want it at two different locations around the world, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, and now available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow, I think. And it would be just like me remembering all of that if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Our thanks to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. This week's secret word is...
Abu Ghraib.
The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home. That's right, of the homeless.